Good evening and welcome to A Fireside Chat. This is your host, Lance White, otherwise known as Zany Mystic. I have to thank my friends at Act One Video in Placerville for tonight's guest, as in particular Brandon, who asked me if I'd read a book by Bob Frisell. It's called Nothing in This Book is True, But It's Exactly How Things Are. I laughed because I had read it about a year or two ago and loved it. And Bob's next book was titled Something in This Book is True, and it's on earth changes, pole shifts, Hopi prophecies, the secret government, the Greys, ascended masters, and Junvalo Melchizedek providing a 13th dimensional perspective. His most recent book is called You Are a Spiritual Being Having a Human Experience. He leads workshops on the flower of life in the Bay Area and is an expert rebirther through Leonard Orr, and I think he has another book in progress. So let's welcome him to the show now. Hi, Bob. How are you?
Hey, hi, Lance. How you doing?
Good. I have quite a few questions, but I love your book, by the way. It's one of my all-time favorite books, and I recommend it to everybody.
Well, thank you.
I thought we might start out by going backing up to your first book and asking how that book came about for you.
Well, that's a good question. It's not something that I set out to do. In fact, quite to the contrary, I was avoiding writing a book. The whole book writing process actually began a few years earlier. When I had a client who told me after, seven or eight private sessions, that she was an author and that she was keeping a very detailed record of her experience in our sessions, and she asked if I would like to co-author a book with her. And I said, I said no, and I was trying to avoid writing a book ever since until I, unfortunately, or take your pick otherwise, I got a phone call one day from a man who happens to own a publishing company who wanted to come and do a series of private sessions with me. And, one thing just led to another. And one day he called me up and asked me if I would write a book. So there's a little bit more to that also, Lance. He turned out to be the same person who published Richard Hoagland's book, The Monuments on Mars.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So unknowingly we had a real common link there, and I got my first clue when on the first session he brought a company catalog, and in the very middle of the front page was a tiny little picture of the face on Mars.
Oh, and yes.
Yeah. Well, I didn't say anything until the session was complete. I mean, we had work to do, but I asked him about that, and then he told me about his publishing Hoagland's book, and we started talking. Now, realize the last thing on my mind was writing a book, so I was not campaigning for anything.
Yeah.
And when he called me a few weeks later to ask if I would write a book, I was really fortunate in that it was just a message, and I came home late, got the message, and after my first thought was, no way, I started to realize that, you know, you can call that a coincidence, but the real punchline on all this is that I went back to the first offer to write a book with this client of mine, and when I found out that we didn't have a publisher, basically what she said was that we would simply be writing a proposal and then we would go around and try and find the publisher, and I said, no way.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I concluded that I'm not going to write a book until or unless a publisher comes to me and asks me, and I knew I was safe at that point because that would never happen, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So here we are, and as a non-author, I've somehow managed to put out two books in addition to that, and I do, you're right, have a fourth one in the pipeline, but it's taking its time, actually.
Yeah, my first one is taking its time.
I
can empathize because it's like, you know, it really is like giving birth.
Yes.
It's far more demanding than you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, I'll advise you, Lance, don't ever do it. It's too much time, it's too much work, and it's all, I mean, if you think you know your topic, you just try writing a book about it.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where I was at.
The Shifting Sands of Egypt.
Yeah.
You know, your book, it's such a marvelous book because it's got everything in it that, I mean, I've been following this stuff for a number of years, and you really cover in depth, you know, the highlights of what's going on these days. And I think the most crucial thing that people are concerned about is the coming shift, which is accompanied by a pole shift. Some people say that it's connected to the Mayan prophecy end time of 2012 and so on. I believe it's coming, and I believe that the pole shift is on its way. It will happen. Can you tell us, our listeners, what that will entail and how it's happening and approximately when?
Yeah, well, that's a big question, so maybe we should just set a little groundwork here to lay some foundation.
Okay.
First of all, when I look at my first book, Nothing in This Book is True, I see that basically it was, number one, about, you might say, painting a big picture perspective on what's going on, and just putting it out as a possibility. I realize that it's, you know, pretty far out there in a lot of ways, and so the title for me really covered it perfect. Look, nothing in this is true anyway, so it leaves you with the possibility. You know, you can think about it, you can believe it, you can not believe it, you can treat it like science fiction, or you can, you know, do whatever you want with it. So that also gives us freedom to talk right here, right now, too. The big picture context is, to me, tremendously important. It was, for me personally, the missing piece that, when it revealed itself to me, magically everything just sort of began to fall into place.
Mm-hmm.
There's another real bottom line concept that I was trying to bring forth, Lance, and that's the whole idea that, in spite of the fact that we are pretty much convinced that we are separate from and cut off from the rest of the reality, the truth is, nothing could be further from the truth.
Mm.
You and I are intimately connected to everyone and to everything, basically to all life everywhere, and there is no separation from the whole. So to perhaps take the next leap, we need to begin to realize that really nothing is as it appears to be. I mean, there's the surface story of what's going on, and then if you dig beneath the surface a little bit, perhaps lifting a veil or two, you'll begin to gain an entirely different perspective on the very same event. And so that's the big picture context. And it's really well to note that there's really there's just so much more here. There's other worlds. You know, we tend to think that on this little speck of dust out in the middle of nowhere, we've been told that we're all there is and there's nothing else. Well, hello.
Pack of lies.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's distortions and it's sleep.
Yeah,
That
one's beginning to break down pretty good, too.
There
is plenty of evidence to indicate otherwise.
Yeah.
So what I would like to point to is the fact that there's other worlds, literally different wavelength dimensional worlds. You could also call them parallel universes. I don't know if there's an infinite number, but it's darn close.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just sitting on one of many possible different wavelength universes. And we happen to be, that is, according to, you might say, the higher life forms, the highest form of us is what we refer to as the ascended masters, and also life forms beyond them are telling us, and that is that we're on a third dimensional planet that is occupying a very specific wavelength universe, and it is very much in the process of moving into a shorter wavelength into a higher dimensional reality.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they're saying, and we have literature also from the Hindus and other folks from way back, telling us that when we come to this possibility of what you might call a dimensional shift, obviously we're in the throes of tremendous change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not only is the what you might call the consciousness factor because when we go into a shorter wavelength universe, we're going to change our interpretation of the reality almost completely.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also telling us that there are physical changes that accompany the process, and that's the whole idea, ultimately, of the pole shifting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so you want to talk about the pole shifting?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that subject.
Yeah, right. Well, it can bring up a little bit of fear in some people, because when you're talking about shifting of the poles, you're talking about 1,000-mile-an-hour surface winds and continents moving to the tune of 1,000 to 2,000 miles an hour, and obviously not too much is going to survive that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my purpose to bring up fear in people, however. What we need to realize is that this happens simultaneously to a dimensional shift.
Mm-hmm.
So when the surface winds are blowing, at the very same moment, we are out of it. We're literally transferring up to a different wavelength universe.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that ties into a lot of the biblical prophecies, too, and the Nostradamus and, you know, a lot of the Edgar Casey material and so on, and a lot of the channel material that people will literally, in a sense, seem to dissolve or fade away or whatever, you know, as we shift into a, I guess they call it a light body or a light vehicle. And then that brings up the whole thing of the Merkaba, but let's postpone that temporarily and continue with what you're preparing here to share with us.
Okay. Well, you mentioned Nostradamus and Casey and people like that. When I first heard about this, it was way back in about 1981 from Leonard Orr, the founder of Rebirthing. It was a total mind blower to me. You could have easily dismissed it, but I trusted Leonard and wondered why he was bringing this literally out of the blue.
Yeah.
But then I began to realize that he would spend time each year with the Hopis, who also have been bringing this forth for a long time in the form of their Hopi prophecies.
That's right.
Edgar Casey allegedly was giving a reading, The Sleeping Prophet, back in the 1930s, and he stopped right in mid-sentence and said, you know, there's something a bit more important that's about to be going on, and he started talking about the pole shifting in the winter of 1998.
Uh-huh.
Well, I went to an evening presentation that Leonard was putting on during December of 1981, thinking that he was going to talk about the spiritual interpretation of Handel's Messiah, and then he starts talking about the pole shifting. He passed out an essay, about a 5 or 6 page essay called The Rebirth of the Late Great Planet Earth. This is the first I'd ever heard about this.
Wow.
And I only had partial information. And if all you have is partial information, it can be rather frightening, to say the least.
Yeah,
yeah. Took about 10, 12 years to put all the pieces together. But when you get the entire, all the pieces of the puzzle, if you will, then what originally through partial information could be frightening is really, you begin to realize it could be a beautiful experience. It could literally be the ride of our lives.
Yeah.
Now, Lance, let me introduce and lay down one basic thought here. There's a particular ascended master who's been around for a long, long time, 52,000 years.
Mm.
Goes by the name of Thoth.
Oh,
and what
Thoth.
He says, Thoth says that the degree of severity, and the other side of that would be the degree of how gentle the pole shift might be, is directly connected to the consciousness of the planet.
Yeah.
In other words, what he's saying then is that to the degree that we're able to wake up and create the critical mass, if you will, that we can create it being a very, very gentle and very pleasant experience.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if we go through these changes immersed in fear, then, you know, it's just like birth, because it is birth. And, you know, if a woman is giving birth and is totally locked up in fear, birth is going to be a painful experience. Yet we've perhaps heard that there, you know, in some remote corner of the planet or wherever, certainly not here, that women have the experience of birth being a very, very gentle and sometimes a very, very pleasant experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's all a function of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so, absolutely. And it does seem that there are opposing forces that... I was just rereading your book. I was, you know, kind of skimming through it to get an idea of the way that it was laid out. And you do explain in there about the opposing forces and that they are, that there takes three forces to create, and that it's, we're not really in duality. That there's a triality occurring, even though we don't see it. And that the darkness, or the part that's resisting consciousness, is necessary to create the tension, the balancing out act. Am I saying that right or not?
Okay, well, Lance, you're breaking up pretty seriously, and I think, however, I got the gist of your message. If you've got some technician there, hopefully they can correct it, but. It sounds like you were on a cell phone that's seriously breaking up.
Oh, that's the new digital. That's the new.
But
digital,
I think I can comment. I think I can comment on what you said. Basically, what I hear you asking is the whole distinction between what you might call polarity consciousness and unity consciousness. Yeah.
Yes.
So we are immersed in polarity consciousness. It's. I mean, we don't even think about it. We just are. It's directly the result of the experience we have of being separate from and cut off from the rest of the reality. And so we see everything in terms of good and evil, right and wrong, good and bad, and all of that. Mm-hmm. And what we're missing is the unity of being. What we're missing is the fact that everything is intimately interconnected. So when we see, for example, the forces of darkness doing everything they can to keep us stuck in fear and limitation for as long as they can, and that's their job, and they do a good job of it, too. And then we see that opposite to that is the forces of light that are doing everything they can to bring us into the light as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And this gets played out on the big screen very heavy-duty levels of consciousness. I mean, in many ways, light years above us, both representing the forces of light on the one hand and representing the forces of darkness on the other hand. What we miss is that the unity of being, and it's telling us that everything is intimately interconnected, everything is intimately a part of the whole. In spiritual terms, it's telling us there's only one spirit moving through all life everywhere. Mm. And that no matter how good it might seem, and no matter how bad it might seem, that it's all always and only a function of the one spirit. And in fact, they're working together. If you can, you might say, step up a notch or two in awareness from polarity and into unity, then you will begin to see something quite different. The forces of darkness doing everything they can to keep us stuck in fear are actually serving as a timing agent. That is, they're working in connection with the forces of light. So what it means then is that basically timing is everything. And, you know, a baby's supposed to be born at 9 months, not 3 months or 15 months. When the timing is right, the event happens.
Mm-hmm.
In that context, the forces of darkness are actually doing us a service. And the service quite specifically is that by bringing to our attention our fears and limitations, it's giving us an opportunity to move through them. But that's only if we're aware enough or conscious enough to learn to move with this energy rather than to oppose it. And that's basically the distinction between polarity and unity consciousness.
How do you see the elements of global warming and things like chemtrails being sprayed globally and the bees disappearing playing into this process?
Yeah, right. There's a lot going on, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, from a
like
big from a big picture, Lance, from a big picture perspective, and I think it's important to keep some awareness of that, because it's so easy to get lost. I mean, clearly, we're not going to get anything approaching a big picture perspective from any of the media. There's no context whatsoever. You're just given information, and and, you know, basically it's propaganda.
Right, right.
But from a big picture perspective, if it's really true that we're right on the throes of these tremendous changes, literally moving into a higher dimensional world, a shorter wavelength, where we will at that point completely reinterpret who we are, why we're here, and all the rest of it. Well, what that means then is that there is a birth process going on. Simultaneously, there is a death process. The old way, the old world is dying.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a normal, natural event whenever we come to this time, these times of tremendous change, which, by the way, happen like clockwork. Roughly every 13,000 years, we come to these points where tremendous change happens.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last time it happened, talk about the old world dying, Atlantis, along with 64 million inhabitants, fell into the Atlantic Ocean.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah. And then what happens, where do those souls cycle off to? Many of the people, the souls that are here now, the 6.5 billion, are all scheduled to make it to higher dimensions, or is it possible that some will choose to remain in a 3D kind of environment, or are some just not capable of evolving further?
Yeah, well, that's really a great question, what I've been entertaining and hanging out with for a long, long time now. First of all, let's be real clear that as a aspect of the eternal spirit, we've been around since the very beginning, obviously in various forms, and we're going to be around until the very end, if there is such a thing as the very end. We just go through different changes of form, if you will.
Right.
Here's an interesting aspect in this, and that is the ascended masters and levels of awareness above them, Melchizedek specifically. They believe, and nobody knows for sure, but they believe that it's quite likely, quite possible, in fact, that when this shift happens, that all of us, all 6.5 billion of us, are going to ascend into the next level as one.
Yeah.
You might ask the question, well, how is that possible? I don't know. I'm just reporting on that one.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, it's also very, very possible and quite likely that that if all of us do not make it, those of us, I mean, there's free will, and you can just say, I'm not going for whatever reason. And for those who have made that choice, if they do, then they will be taken, you might say, to another planet that probably looks very much like this one, that is probably in the same relative degree of awareness and consciousness, and they'll be allowed to, continue to do their thing.
Yeah.
And nobody knows for sure, but I'll just add one more bit of input, and that is that usually when a third dimensional planet like ours goes through a dimensional shift, and here again, in the big picture context, this is no big deal. Planets routinely do this every 13,000 years. So when this usually happens to a third dimensional planet, the usual scenario is very few initially make it through to the higher levels, and the rest of the planet is actually bumped down a layer or two. I mean, that begins to make sense when you realize you're asking about, global warming and earth changes and all that sort of thing. You could make a convincing argument that Mother Earth, her third dimensional aspect, needs a rest from humanity.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And so the usual scenario is that the many who are left behind are actually taken to perhaps a dimension that's even a overtone or two lower than this one, but to them is harmonious.
Right.
Now, the punchline on all of this is that the very few who initially make it through in the usual scenario will eventually bring up the rest of the planet, and it's going to take probably a long, long time. But that's not likely to happen this time.
Yeah, it seems like this is a particular cycle that's different than the rest.
Yep.
It's different than the previous 13,000-year cycles, that there's that there are many, many cycles that are reaching kind of that clockwork point where you know, it's midnight on, you know, various clocks at the same time. One thing you mentioned that I found really interesting was that synthetics will not make the shift.
Nope.
And I had an interesting experience. I had a Kundalini experience in an altered state a couple of years ago. And during that time, I was in communication with advanced beings. I don't know who it was, but I was communicating. And I literally took every piece of plastic. I went through everything in the house and threw it all by the back door to take it out. And I find that interesting because when I read your, you know, that plastics and things like that were not going to make it, I was doing it at that time. You know, I was preparing for the shift. I was just a little early, I guess.
Yeah.
You want to elaborate on that a bit?
Well, you better be wearing cotton at the time of the shift.
Oh, golly.
Polyester ain't going to make it.
Yeah, well, nude is okay.
The only thing that makes it through, let's give a little context for this. Our history books tell us that we go back 6,000 years, and it all began about 3,800 BC in Sumeria.
Yeah.
And before that, literally the day before that, we were nothing but hairy barbarians, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, pops this really super advanced culture called Sumerian.
Yeah.
But the truth is, the larger truth is that we have a 500 million year history of,
yeah,
of life forms, most of them much, much higher than we are right now, on a much higher dimensional level, coming here from who knows where and creating whole new races of beings and leaving, and their offspring leaving too. And when they leave absolutely no trace whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason is twofold. Number one, when the dimensions shift, they're just gone, poof, vanished. And
yeah,
the other thing is that, as we're getting to, nothing synthetic will make it through a dimensional shift. Nothing synthetic. So, for example, when the Great Pyramid was built, and the Ascended Master, it says, he built the Great Pyramid, and he built it about 200 years before the last pole shift and the last dimensional shift, the one where Atlantis sank and we ended up here.
Mm-hmm.
He built it, he had a few of his friends, Ascended Masters, helping him with it, and they built it out of natural material. The reason is that natural material is the only thing that would make it through the dimensional shift.
Mm-hmm.
So if it would have been built out of stainless steel or, you know, some whatever material, it simply would have vanished.
Yeah, yeah.
See, there's other factors. The magnetic field, when the dimensional shift actually happens, the Earth's magnetic field goes to zero. And basically, synthetic materials are not going to survive that.
Doesn't the planet stop rotating as well? There's something. Does it reverse rotation, or does it? It seems like I've read that the planet literally stops, and then the oceans, because the impetus to continue rotating is there, that tend to wash over the land at that time.
What happens is it actually reverses itself.
Mm-hmm.
Thoth gave a very interesting perspective on this, and he said that given that he's been around for 52,000 years, he's been through these sorts of things five different times.
Wow.
What he said was that he's seen the sun rise in the east,
okay,
then he saw it rise in the west, then he saw it rise in the east again, rise in the west, and rise in the east as it is right now. And so what he's saying is that it actually reverses itself. And so when it happens again, and it could happen very quickly, very soon, we're going to see the sun rising in the west for 13,000 years.
Wow. Now, what causes the 2 or 3 days of darkness? Is that, what does that have to do with?
That's when the poles and the dimensions actually shift.
Okay.
So usually it's about 3 to 3.5 days, where when that happens, and if you are, first of all, in order to, you might say, consciously survive this, you need to have some sort of a protection field. because you're going to go poof too when the magnetic field goes to zero in the absence of that. But if you have the sufficient protection, what you're going to find when you're in the midst of a dimensional shift is that for about 3 to 3.5, first of all, what you're going to experience in a, given a few hours before the shift actually happens is you're going to begin to see objects that you have never seen before when the two dimensions begin to interface. You're going to see colors that will absolutely, totally, and completely blow your mind. We're talking about fourth dimensional objects and fourth dimensional colors here. And what you're beginning to see then is the breakdown of the third dimension as we're preparing to enter into the fourth dimension. Wow. Well, then about a few hours into that process, maybe 4, 5, 6 hours into that process, the visual experience of the, you might say, the field of energy that's protecting you, it's going to turn into what you what would look very much like a reddish fog. And then, very rapidly, it's going to go through the colors of the rainbow, from red to orange to yellow to green to blue to indigo and violet. And very shortly after that, you're out of here. It's going to be maybe just a very few seconds where, in rapid-fire succession, you're going to be able to see through, like if you're sitting inside of a building, you'll be able to see through the walls. Everything's going to appear to be golden. This happens very, very rapidly. And then, with no warning whatsoever, you're going to find yourself in the blackest black, the most complete sensory deprivation experience that you could ever imagine. You have just entered into the great void, the void between the dimensional worlds. And experientially, even though there's no such thing as time, there's no frame of reference whatsoever. I mean, there's nothing there, so you don't know if you're moving, you don't know what's up or down or east or west.
Yeah.
But experientially, it's going to be about 3 to 3.5 days where you're in this void.
Well, I can see where that would be something that most souls would find disconcerting, to say the least.
You're breaking up again, but there's a few more things I can say about that. The point here, Lance, is that going back to the idea of different worlds here, different dimensional worlds, they're wavelength universes. And in fact, they are separated, the dimensional worlds are separated by wavelength in exactly the same way that the notes are separated by wavelength on a musical scale.
Mm-hmm.
And so the analogy holds up exactly. If you look at a piano keyboard and take, you know, the 8 white notes of the octave and pick the octave exactly in the middle so you know it repeats itself clearly in both directions a number of times. But there's more to the octave than the 8 white keys, because there's the 5 black keys also.
Yeah.
You add the 5 plus 8 to give you the 13 notes in the chromatic scale, and it's even more complex than that, because in between every note is something called overtones. To cut to the quick here, this analogy holds exactly with regard to dimensional worlds, because there are the 13th note would be the return note. So in dimensional terms, there's 12 major universes in our octave of existence, but there's much more than that, because in between each of the major universes, there's also 12 harmonic overtones. Each is a world or a dimensional world just as vast as this one. And they are all separated by voidness.
Wow.
Actually, voidness in 90 degrees. So in order to learn to travel interdimensionally, you have to learn how to make a 90-degree turn and go through the great void for about 3 to 3.5 days.
Wow.
Which is exactly what UFOs do for anybody who's seen them. If anybody has seen a UFO just going along and then all of a sudden taking a 90-degree turn and disappearing, what they're doing is exactly that.
Wow. I'm glad you brought up the UFOs. Some people say that we have quite a bit of help from star nations and star beings. And then, of course, there's also the Greys and so on and so forth. Would you talk a little bit about the, you know, the ET influence?
Yeah, it's massive. I strongly suspect that every single planet in you know throughout the cosmos is populated. Now, the thing here is that you have to know which level, which dimensional level to look at. And I'll give an example. If you look at our neighbor Venus, and if you look at the third dimensional level of Venus, you're not going to find anything there.
Right.
But if you go up a few overtones into the higher overtones of the fourth dimension, you're going to find the Hathor rays. And the Hathor rays are fourth dimensional beings. They are highly evolved, highly conscious, and very loving beings. And literally, the fourth dimensional aspect of Venus is the headquarters for our solar system. In other words, if you're coming to here from Sirius or the Pleiades or some other place, you must check in with the Hathors in Venus in order to gain access to our system.
Really?
So I really feel that every planet, not only in our system, but every planet everywhere has life on it, if you look at the right dimensional level. And the vast majority of life is, are what you might call the light beings, and you bet they're rooting for us. Yeah, there are the dark forces too, and certainly the grays are high on that list, but they have plenty of company also, and it's just this interplay. We were talking earlier about the the big picture context, and from the level of unity, you're going to see, yes, it's true that the grays and other dark force entities are doing basically everything they can to keep us in fear and limitation for the purpose of controlling us. But at the same time, they're balanced by the forces of light, the good guys, if you will, that are doing everything they can to help us along the path towards the light. And what we need to do our best to keep in mind is that the two are actually working together, serving as time agents.
Interesting. There are some that are starting to write books and talk openly about the idea that we actually choose our soul contracts before we incarnate here. And so, the timing of our awakening and when the veil starts to lift for us is all more or less predetermined in our own contract.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true or not, but I can see that, there are patterns in my own life that, I probably chose my parents and most of the major events that brought me to wherever I'm at today.
Yeah.
What about the awakening of humanity? It's said that only a small percentage is really needed to awaken the rest.
Right, right. That's the critical mass. That's really the good news. I mean, you could easily conclude looking out there that, oh my God, this is a hopeless situation.
Yeah.
Here we are in the 21st century, and you'd think we'd learned a thing or two about fighting wars, yet we're continuing to do it.
Yeah.
We're destroying the planet as rapidly as we are, and I mean, come on, there's no way out of this one, right?
Exactly.
Well, the good news is it doesn't take 6.5 billion people waking up. There's no possibility for that. All it takes is a critical mass, and that usually is in the neighborhood of somewhere between 7 to 10%. Think of it this way: that there is a grid, an electromagnetic energy field about 60 miles above the planet that is new and encircling the globe and allowing this awakening, this new consciousness, this dimensional shift to come forth, if you will. As you and I individually wake up and connect with that grid, in some ways it's as simple as seeing that the glass is half full versus half empty. However, there's really more to it than that, but you could say that it's about the process of beginning to remember who you are and why you're here. Not the what it says on your driver's license or your job description or any of the rest of that. That's important, but I mean, there's something else going on. If it's really true that spirit is eternal and as an integral, inseparable from the whole aspect of the one and eternal spirit, you and I have been around forever, then maybe, just maybe, we're more than we've been let ourselves been allowed to believe or to contemplate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the process of waking up. And as we individually and collectively do wake up and lift a veil or two, if you will, then we're putting that awareness into the grid. And it becomes very powerful. It becomes exponentially powerful.
Mm-hmm.
What you need to affect tremendous change is simply a critical mass of beings. Let's go with the figure 7 to 10%. Putting their consciousness into the grid, you know, having peace and love be more important than war and destruction and, you know, good stuff like that. We're rapidly approaching that, even though
it would
I
seem
admit
that way.
It doesn't look that way.
Yeah. But still, you know, if you do look for the consciousness appearing on the planet, it is showing up. But you do have to kind of dig for it and to find it.
Yes.
You know, and people like yourself and quite a few others are like beacons of light.
Well, this has gotten out quite good, no doubt about it. However, there's a lot of propaganda out there that any time you put out a strong bit of truth, you can bet that the forces of darkness are going to do everything they can. I mean, they're doing their job to counteract it. That's just the way it works. And so you need to be a bit discerning and buy into, Fox News and...
Just about anything on the television set.
Yeah, it's kill your television. That's actually a pretty good idea.
Not a bad idea.
Or if you're going to use it, or get some good videos and watch them.
Yeah, that's what I do. I pretty much keep the set turned off. In fact, there was a Pleiadian channeling through Barbara Marciniak that recommended that you literally unplug the television set.
Yeah.
And the microwave as well. They seem to feel that those were very disturbing influences on us.
Well, they're right. They are.
Yeah.
And cell phones, too. So.
And cell phones, too. Yes, I don't have one of those, fortunately.
Okay. You and me. You and me both, but we're about to
be
on the planet who don't. So.
No way. Now, we're in 2007, and, we don't really know the date. Nobody knows the day or hour, as it says in other books. But what do you see on the horizon? Some psychics and some people who do prophecy say that 2007 is going to be a bumpy ride. And what do you see on the horizon for us?
Oh, yeah, bumpy ride for sure. But, what else is new? Let me lay down an analogy here.
Okay.
To, you might say, kick this off. What I would say is that if you look at the forces of darkness that are running and still in control of this planet, the analogy I would give is that for a long, long time, they've had pretty much their own way and their own say in things. And so picture then that their playground, if you will, is this huge island in the middle of the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the masters of the island, and, that's whatever they say goes. But there is a problem. The problem is that the tide is coming in, and it's been coming in for some time, further compounded by the fact that it's not receding. And so what used to be this huge island is gradually becoming nothing more than just the tallest peaks, and they've all been forced to become instant mountain climbers, if you will. There's not much left for them. And so it's not human nature for them to give up the ship and jump into the ocean and commit suicide. It's far more likely that they're going to go down kicking and screaming and doing everything they can to maintain their grip on things for as long as they can.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying then is that there's a tremendous infusion of light energy on the planet. If it's really true that we're about to enter a shorter wavelength universe, then what that's saying is that the beings on that level of awareness relative to us are light beings. where the energy is tremendously accelerated compared to here. See, it's not, this is only one aspect of the reality, this dark, dense, solid aspect called the third dimension.
Yeah.
In the higher overtones of the fourth dimension, a being from that level would be able to walk right through the wall on the third dimensional level here.
Yeah.
So if it's really true that we're very much in the process of moving into the fourth dimension, then it would also be true that there's a tremendous infusion of light energy, an acceleration, if you will. And so that's what I mean when I say that the forces of darkness are literally losing their playground. Things just are not working out for them as well as they would like. It's really that simple.
It also seems that they have a tendency to, that if they can't have their way, they'll destroy everything in the process.
It kind of looks that way, don't it?
It does seem that way. And of course, out of death is the phoenix being reborn from the ashes. So, you know, death is not the end, and it's an illusion. But still, you know, for those of us that are in 3D at the moment, like you and myself, even if we see differently, it's still a little bit disconcerting to think about, you know, losing your life prematurely for some reason.
Yeah, there's tremendous value in finding a way to stay grounded throughout the tremendous change that we're all going through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just a couple thoughts I'll throw out at you here. First of all, change is not necessarily bad. Change is something that we all have to go through if, in fact, we are able to step into the higher levels of awareness. In other words, we have to shed some of the thick skin that we've developed as a result of being on this level of polarity consciousness, good and evil consciousness for a long, long time. And we've talked a lot about the big picture context here, but also I think it's very well to note that the actual process of learning how to integrate, worded a little bit differently, learning how to move out of polarity and separation and into unity is something that is very readily available to us if we simply learn the techniques and what's involved.
Uh-huh.
There's a couple very simple principles that I want to lay out here that is really the foundation for the process of moving from polarity and into unity. One being that if we resist change, the very basic principle is resistance equals persistence. Whatever you and I resist or don't want to deal with, it's not going to go away.
Right.
We're only going to get more of it.
Right.
But the other side of that is that what we learn to expand to include. Now, unity consciousness is exactly that, the process of including the whole rather than separation, good and evil, is I'll take the good and try and sweep the evil or the darkness under the rug and hope it'll go away. It doesn't work. That's resistance equals persistence. But by expanding to include the whole of what's going on, you can learn to develop as a very reliable process within you. Each and every one of us can learn this, how to move out of separation and into unity. In other words, let me put it this way, that whenever we are holding out of polarity consciousness something we don't like, it's what I would call a negative context. So basically a negative context is whenever we're comparing the situation as is to an imaginary standard. In other words, we're insisting that reality should be different from what it is. Well, this is a judgment, or what I also refer to as a make-wrong. And the basic point here is that the wrongness is not inherent in the experience. It's a function of how you are making it. So it's equally possible to hold the same experience in what I would call a neutral or a positive context in which you're not comparing it to imaginary standard. You're simply letting it be the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the other key points here is that whenever you and I judge something or make something wrong, not only is there a negative thought that goes with that, but there is also a corresponding, you might say, a pattern of energy that gets stuck in the body, and it will stay stuck in the body for as long as we're holding on to the judgment. I mean, yeah. The energy is locked in place. It can't move. Well, all it takes to integrate this judgment or make-wrong is the willingness to expand to include it by feeling it in detail. In other words, this, you might say, layer of stuck energy, instead of resisting it, to go into it and go with it and feel it in detail and then find a positive way of relating to it. And when you've done that, you've integrated on every level and throughout all of your senses. And the reason it's true is because the thought and the feeling are just two different aspects of the same thing. Yeah. And so when you integrate on the feeling level, you can develop for yourself an extremely efficient way of creating emotional resolution or integration. So that's the process that I've been immersed in for a long, long time that traditionally has been known as rebirthing, that I also like to call the breath of life, in which we learn that integration is a very, can be developed to be a totally reliable way of moving out of separation and into unity. Uh-huh. Well, when you've integrated something into unity, you're no longer at the effect. Fear would be an example. You could, if you're at the effect of your fear, you know, you're kind of just locked into place with
yes.
But when you integrate fear, one example of fear would be fear of public speaking. I'm sure that would be high on the list of, if you interviewed 100 people, you know, what's your greatest fear? It probably would be up there. Yet the mortality rate for public speakers is really very low. So it's not a real fear. It's just an imaginary fear. However, if you're going to try and give a speech when you're at the effect of the fear, I'd say good luck. But when the fear integrates, what you're left with is excitement and exhilaration. So there's a clear shift in energy in the body. And when you've got the feeling of excitement and exhilaration, now you can operate. If the fear is real, if there really is a threat to your aliveness or to your well-being, then an example would be if you're driving down an icy road, and if you're at the effect of your fear, you're probably going to go tumbling over the cliff. But if you've integrated the fear, you have a much greater ability to be with the situation. Basically, it's called alertness. And if you're there in your body fully alert, the chances are great that you're going to make it through and be okay. Mm-hmm. So integration is real stuff. And it's just, you know, how this all boils down to where you and I live and how we can learn to function and move with these tremendous changes that we're all moving through. When you've integrated your fear, Lance, you've moved into your own personal power. And when you're in your personal power, you put that into the grid. That's what's creating the critical mass.
Interesting. And you do, this is a process that occurs through rebirthing as well. And don't you also work with the Merkaba, the Flower of Life, and so on, the Junvalos work?
Yes, I do. I give two workshops. One is called The Flower of Life, where we spend a great deal of time showing the unity of life and also showing teaching this what you might call vehicle of protection, also a vehicle of ascension. It's known as the Merkaba. Merkaba is actually three words, and what it refers to is counter-rotating fields of light that takes both spirit and body with it. It's absolutely necessary to have a field of protection as you're going through a dimensional shift. That field of protection is called the Merkaba, and it can be created as a living energy field around the body. So that's really what we're looking at in the Flower of Life. My other workshop I call Nothing to Something, where we teach the breath of life rebirthing. In other words, this reliable, extremely reliable method of learning how to create emotional resolution for yourself.
It sounds interesting. And you're in the Bay Area, aren't you?
I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area. Actually, I'm in Marin County in the Point Reyes National Seashore area. So it's really a beautiful area here.
Wow. Yeah, I've lived in San Francisco a long time. You mentioned make-wrongs, and it reminded me of when I did the EST training with Werner Erhard.
You did that too, eh?
Yeah, and the 6 day as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They were quite a lot of fun.
Oh, yes. I took the EST training, and it was a major, major life-turning experience for me.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. I mean, I didn't love it, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
It definitely changes your perspective about things.
Yeah. Actually, in my second book, something in this book is true. I have a whole chapter devoted to my experience of the EST training.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I had ordered your book, and I had hoped, your second book, and I had hoped to be able to read it before this interview, but it didn't arrive in time, so hopefully you'll be available somewhere down the line, and we can do another one of these shows.
Oh, yeah, I'll be around. That's a great idea.
Yeah, you know, this is really fascinating stuff, and I wanted to get into the idea of an inner and outer Merkaba.
Yeah.
But we probably won't have time to delve into that too much. But I found that your description of how the light uses it, the inner Merkaba, to develop emotions, and the other, I should just be quiet and let you talk about it.
Well, how much time do we have now, Andrew?
We have about 5 minutes left.
We can get into that a bit. Yeah.
Okay.
The,
good.
The Merkaba, the vehicle of ascension. There's basically two ways that it can be created. One is, and what we teach in the Flower of Life workshop is how to create it as a living energy field around the body. Should preface that for a moment or two by suggesting that there's really far more to our bodies than just the physical aspect. There literally is energy fields around the body that extend about 50 to 60 feet around the body, and they take very specific geometrical shapes that we identify and work with in the workshop. So the idea then is that when you have both sides of the brain, the left brain logical understanding combined with the right brain intuitive feminine aspect, when you've got the two working together, it's the possibility exists to create this living energy field around the body in the form of these counter-rotating fields of energy. Like I said earlier, Merkaba is actually three words referring to counter-rotating fields of energy that takes both spirit and body with it. So an activated Merkaba field, when it's fully developed and at the time of the dimensional shift, will enable you to travel interdimensionally through the great void into the fourth dimension, bringing your body and your spirit with you. So the visual experience would be, on this level, actually I talked about it earlier, the visual experience would be the 50 to 60 foot energy field around the body will turn into a reddish fog, then very rapidly go through the colors of the rainbow, and then very rapidly you would disappear. You'd be out of here. And for about three and a half days in your field, you would be in the voidness separating the two-dimensional realities. Then, with absolutely no warning, you would instantly appear in the dimensional world you've tuned to, which for us would be the higher overtones of the fourth dimension.
Yeah.
Well, you can also create a Merkaba field synthetically, and that's what UFOs are about. In other words, it's possible. It is possible, and UFOs are definitely illustrating that possibility, that you can just take the left brain idea and develop the technology and create a hard shell vehicle, get in the thing, and travel interdimensionally. So there's two ways of doing it. There's really a lot more to that discussion, and I don't know how far we can get into it right now, but it's pretty fascinating stuff, to say the least.
You know, I might be interested in taking one of your seminars myself. I live in Northern California, so it wouldn't be hard for me to get down to the Bay Area.
We're almost neighbors.
Yeah, you know, and I've read a couple of Drun Vollo's books, this Flower of Life series, and I think he's just amazing, you know.
Yep,
and I know you've worked closely with Drun Vollo, haven't you?
No doubt, and when I first became aware of him and of his work back in June of 1992, it absolutely was the missing piece that filled in the blanks for me. It was really the culmination of a very intense search, And about 5 minutes into his initial presentation, I realized this is it.
This is it. So, yeah. I've been intrigued by this for a long time, and maybe it's time for me to get off my duff and actually, you know, learn something new.
Yeah.
Well, 1982 was the harmonic convergence, wasn't it? Or
1983? 1987, I think it was, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, you're probably right. But yeah. Anyway, somewhere in that timeline, it's a blink of an eye anyway. Before we actually have to get off the air, and we don't have to, but I want to make sure that you are able to tell people how people can reach you and find your books and your workshops.
Just go to my website, bobfrizzell.com, and you'll find everything there, complete description of the books and of the workshops.
Wonderful. And it's spelled B-O-B-F-R-I-S-S-E-L-L, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Bobfrizzell.com.
Good. And you also have some you have a wonderful website, by the way, and some interesting articles and some very profound spiritual information on the higher self and a lot of the subjects that we've been talking about. So, you know, I highly encourage people to go visit your website and to read your books, and I'm really looking forward to getting your next book.
Uh-huh.
So
one of these days, right?
Yeah, I hope so. I'll save up my questions from that book, and hopefully you'll be available and we can do another one of these shows.
Yes, love to do it again.
Wonderful. Well, thanks a million, Bob. You've been a terrific guest, and I just thank you from the bottom of my heart and for sharing your time with us, and I'm really glad that you got pushed into making this book, because it's really marvelous, and it's a paradigm shifting book. So I highly recommend it, and everybody should go out and buy it.
Well, thank you for having me, Lance. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. I look forward to the next time too.
Great.
All right. Well, I guess this is a wrap. I should probably sign off. So good night, everybody, and thank you for listening. Bye bye.